All right. Thank you very much. I'd like to begin by thanking the organizers for the opportunity to be here and to give this talk. So, as my title suggests, I'm going to be telling you about a new class of instanton effects in n equals one string compactifications. This talk is based on joint work that's currently in progress with Edward Witten, although some very general remarks I'll be making about the structure of n equals one effective actions in four dimensions can actually be found in an earlier paper we wrote on instanton effects in super QCD. So now the basic ideology I'm going to espouse to you would apply to a wide range of string and brain instanton effects in various n equals one backgrounds. But for concreteness today, I'm going to focus on a very particular example. So I'm just going to consider a heterotic collabial compactification on R31 times X, where here X is going to be our collabial threefold. And now as part of the additional data we need to specify in this background, we have to specify V here. V is going to be the stable holomorphic gauge bundle that lives over X. So now, associated to this choice of V, I'd also have to tell you whether I'm going to discuss the E8 cross E8 or the SO32 heterotic string. But for the things I'm going to be saying today, that distinction won't really matter, so let me just not make it here. So anyway, so I'm not going to impose any conditions on V other than the conditions that follow from heterotic anomaly cancellation and n equals 1 supersymmetry. So this means that today I'll be working in the from the world sheet perspective in the context of models with general 0,2 supersymmetry. And now, of course, if I want to describe this background to you, this collabial threefold and its bundle, the various continuous parameters I need to specify. So for instance, I need to tell you what is the Kähler class of X and what is the heterotic B field on X, and this data is put together into the complexified Kähler class. I also need to tell you what is the complex structure that's living on my collabial threefold. And similarly, I need to tell you about the complex structure that's living on this bundle V. So all of these continuous choices are put together in what I'll, throughout this talk, denote by curly M, which is just going to be the moduli space associated to this pair X and B. And so this moduli space is going to be the fundamental object that I'm going to be discussing and studying today. So this moduli space is some complex Kähler manifold, and in the low energy effective theory, it's parameterized by a set of light singlet chiral superfields. Of course, in general, in these models, there'll also be some charged light superfields running around. But since I'm just focusing on this singlet moduli space today, I'm just going to be restricting my attention to the singlet sector of the theory. Of course, the charged fields are very important phenomenologically, but they're not my concern today. So, let's see. So the basic problem I want to think about computing quantum corrections to the structure of this moduli space. And so the quantum corrections I'm going to compute are going to be those which are controlled by F terms in the low energy effective action of the theory. And so in particular, so the sorts of corrections I'm going to be considering, as my title suggests, are those which come from instantons. And in this context, the instantons are just going to be Wöhlschen instantons. So now there's a very classic story about heterotic Wöhlschen instantons and corrections to this moduli space, which to begin I want to review for you. So this goes back to the work of Dein, Seiberg, Wynn, and Witten. And so the idea here is that here's our collabial threefold X. And let's suppose that X contains in it surface C. So more precisely, I'm going to assume that C is going to be a smooth, isolated, gene of zero holomorphic curve. And then when X contains such a holomorphic curve, we can consider topologically non-trivial maps from the string world sheet to C. And the important observation of Dein, Seiberg, Wynn, and Witten is that these world sheet instantons can make non-zero contributions to the four-dimensional effective superpotential for these moduli fields. So let me just schematically remind you of the form of this superpotential. So in the simple case, if I just look at degree one maps from my world sheet to see, then this singlet superpotential looks like, so the contribution of C to W, well, there's going to be a classical contribution just from the action of the world sheet instanton. So this will look like the exponential of the area of C in the metric on X divided by 2 pi alpha prime plus the period of the B field over C. And then there'll be a factor that involves various one-loop determinants of the fluctuating modes on the world sheet wrapped along C. I won't make these precise right now. So of course here we see this combination of the area of C, because C is holomorphic, and here's the B field. This is just representing the complexified Cayley class of X. And then the various complex structure moduli of X in the bundle will enter into these one-loop determinants. So now this is just the contribution from a single holomorphic curve living inside our Calabi-Yau threefold. In general, the threefold will have lots and lots of these holomorphic curves. And so the overall contribution to the superpotential for these singlet fields is just going to arise from summing up over all these curves, all these world sheet instantons wrapping curves in the Calabi-Yau threefold of their individual contributions. So now, the important thing to observe is that if this superpotential for these singlet moduli fields is non-zero, then you see there's this exponential dependence on the area of C and hence the Cayley class of X. And this exponential dependence drives the volume of X off to infinity. So these world sheet instantons have the potential to destabilize this compactification. And in terms of our moduli space, it has a very drastic effect, as classically we have some moduli space. But once if we have these non-zero instanton effects, then they'll just completely lift the moduli space. So this is a very drastic quantum modification of the moduli space. So now, so this was observed a long time ago, and then now an interesting question to ask, of course, is sort of conversely. So are there examples of Calabi-Yaus with bundles such that world sheet instantons don't make any contribution to this superpotential? And so many authors have considered this question and have given various situations in which this is the case. One can ask for situations, say, where the contribution from every holomorphic curve vanished because of these one-loop determinants. That's right, yeah. And there's an exponential here, so. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying that point, though. So, right. So it's interesting to ask for situations in which these compactifications aren't destabilized by world sheet instantons.
But if you consider the whole condition from
I think those solutions, what those solutions generally involve.
So these things which is typically, if they're non-zero, a point of view of supergravity, you know, if you put you in supersymmetric anti-decision.
That's what I was about to say, yeah. So certainly. I'm just considering flat Minkowski examples. That's certainly true. So, all right. Right. So, okay, suppose our problem, though, if we just want to look at compactifications in Minkowski space, then we can look for, it's an interesting question to ask for situations where these things might vanish. They might vanish because all of these one-loop determinant factors individually vanish, or they might vanish, or even if the individual factors don't vanish, we might look for some situations where there's a conspiracy amongst these terms and that the sum itself vanishes. So I'm not really going to discuss this story today, but it does motivate the question that I will discuss. So suppose we're in a situation where we have a bunch of holomorphic world sheet instantons, and suppose they don't make any contribution to the superpotential. The question I want to pose is, well, do they have any other interesting effect on the structure of this moduli space? And so, of course, this question is a little bit orthogonal, I think, to the thrust of many of the questions asked today, but I would just want to ask it anyway. So anyway, so in fact, you might ask, well, what sort of effect could world cheating instantons have if they're not going to generate a superpotential? So anyway, I want to give you a sort of a toy model example where world cheating instantons don't, where instantons, I should say, don't generate superpotentials, but they do have a very interesting effect on this moduli space. So the toy model I'm going to consider is not any sort of string theory, but it's just going to be four-dimensional gauge theory. So four-dimensional n equals 1 super QCD. So I'm considering the theory of gauge group SUNC, and in general with NF equals NC minus 1 plus P flavor. So P is just an integer that it's going to parameterize the relationship between NF and NC. And of course, the properties of this theory will depend very strongly on what P happens to be. And by the way, I remind you, flavor, by flavor, I just mean a like chiral multiplet, which transforms in the fundamental plus the anti-fundamental representation of this gauge group. So now there's a classic story about instantons in this theory. So I can't mention this. I can't give a talk about instantons and mention SQCD without mentioning the case P equals 0, or NF equals NC minus 1. So in this case, what happens is gauge theory instantons in this theory generate a non-perturbative superpotential, Biot-like Dein-Seiberg superpotential. And this superpotential is very much analogous to these sort of world cheating instanton superpotentials in the sense that it has a very drastic effect on the classical moduli space of supersymmetric vacuum of this theory. It lifts completely all the flat branches of this moduli space. But now more to the point today, I want to think about SQCD for P equals 1, or for NF equals to NC flavors. And then it's a classic, so in this theory, the gauge theory instantons don't generate any superpotential. And the moduli space, flat directions on the moduli space are not lifted. But it's a classic result of Seiberg that actually there's an instanton effect which results in a deformation of the complex structure of the classical moduli space. So I'll just denote this classical moduli space by M sub naught SQCD. So let me just draw you the cartoon, remind you of the cartoon for this effect. So classically, what this moduli space of SQCD is a cone, a complex cone with a singularity at the origin, which arises from the unbroken gauge symmetry there. And now, the instanton effect, so this is in fact just a one instanton effect in the gauge theory. What the instanton effect does is it simply smooths out the singularity at the origin of the cone. So this is the cartoon that you'll probably see many times. So this is the classical moduli space. This is the quantum. All right. We could just take expectation values of the we want to choose some gauge invariant operators, expectation values of gauge invariant operators to parameterize these moduli spaces. And so in general, I would consider expectation values of the mesons and baryons of the theory. So yeah, I just want to call this example to mind to you, so I won't say anything more explicit. All right, so now I mentioned this example because this is precisely the effect I want to study in the context of world cheating instanton corrections in the heterotic string. I want to ask about whether or not we can look for world cheating instantons which don't generate superpotentials but do have the effect of deforming the complex structure of the classical moduli space of the compactification. So now, it's very useful to think about, let's think a little bit about these effects. So at the end of the day, we're going to want to think about doing an instanton computation. So we should think about what sort of corrections to the effective action we're going to be looking for. So if we want to be discussing, as in this example, a deformation of complex structure, then we're going to be talking about F-term corrections of the effective action. Certainly D-terms aren't going to deform the complex structure of the moduli space. And we couldn't compute them anyway. So we're looking for an F-term, so a chiral, some sort of chiral term. And then we'll have some chiral operator here, curly O. But I precisely don't want to talk about, I'm not interested in superpotential deformations today. So this operator O isn't going to represent a superpotential. Geometrically, what that means is O is not going to come from some holomorphic function on the classical moduli space. If we want to describe deformations of complex structure, we don't need holomorphic functions. We need higher double cohomology classes. And so the first thing I need to do for to talk about today is just what sort of, I need to introduce for you some chiral operators and four-dimensional integrals one effective actions that come from higher double cohomology classes and that we can use to describe deformations of complex structure and in some sense even more general sorts of corrections to this moduli space. So the rest of my talk splits up naturally into two parts. So in the first part, I need to make some general remarks about the structure of these new sorts of F terms that aren't superpotentials in integrals one effective actions. I'll call these things multi-fermion F terms for reasons that will be clear. And in the second part of my talk, I want to go back to this example of the heterotic world Chi instantons and discuss how they can be generated, how these new F terms can be generated. So here are my general remarks on multi-fermion F terms. So the first thing I want to say is, the first caveat really, is that today, just for to avoid technicalities, I'm always going to be working in the context of global n equals 1, d equals 4 SUSY. So this is certainly not a, if I were discussing gauge theory, of course, this would not be a restriction, but in the context of this heterotic, these heterotic models, it means that I'll always implicitly be considering local non-compact Calabi-Yau threefold so that we decouple gravity in four dimensions and can just consider global SUSY. So anyway, so the things I'm going to be considering, so what sort of effective actions will I be considering? Well, if I'm just discussing, say, the Higgs branch of SQCD, or the singlet sector of this heterotic example, then the effective action is just going to be a four-dimensional n equals 1 nonlinear sigma model, which describes maps, which I'll call capital phi, from Minkowski space into, well, classically, into the classical moduli space of the theory. So the effective action is the usual effective action. K here is the Kähler potential in the moduli space, and the phi I and phi bar I bar are light chiral and anti-chiral superfields whose lowest bosonic components are just the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic coordinates on this moduli space. And so now this is the classical effective action. We know, in principle, that the quantum effective action just comes from replacing the classical target space by the quantum moduli space. So I just want to think about how this action receives corrections quantum mechanically. I just want to think about how to represent these corrections explicitly in this sort of form. So let's take this example. Suppose we want to describe a complex structure deformation of the moduli space. So intrinsically, to describe a complex structure deformation, I need to consider just a change in the double d bar operator on the moduli space. So d bar picks up a holomorphic bit, which is, so infinitesimally d bar picks up a holomorphic bit where this omega is an element of this, it's an anti-holomorphic one form valued in the holomorphic tangent bundle of the moduli space. So dually, I could describe this deformation of complex structure in terms of a change of a local holomorphic basis of one forms. So d phi I just shifts by d phi I minus omega I sub j bar d phi bar j bar. And so this means that our original Kähler metric on this moduli space under this deformation, so this Kähler metric is G, it starts off life containing only components of holomorphic type 1-1, and then it shifts by as follows. So under the deformation of complex structure, G just picks up a component of a purely anti-holomorphic component of type 0-2, which I'll denote by omega I bar J bar here. Now, geometrically, omega is just a symmetric section of the bundle of anti-holomorphic one-forms on the moduli space wedged together, tensored up with itself. All right, so if I know how, under this deformation of complex structure, the metric on the moduli space changes, I know precisely what sort of correction I need to add to my classical sigma model effective action to describe the deformation. So we can just read it off from this change in the metric and what it is. So it will be an F term, and it will have the following form. So here's our tensor omega I bar J bar, and I just contract the indices with two of these anti-holomorphic superfields. So these capital D's are just the spinner derivatives on superspace. So these are fermionic anti-chiral superfields. And so if I just perform this integral D2 theta, you see that the leading bosonic bit of the action is a two derivative term for the boson, for these anti-chiral bosons, which is precisely this way we want to correct this metric. So anyway, so there are a couple of observations to make about. So this is the sort of F term we want to be considering. This is clearly a multi-fermion F term because it contains these two fermionic superfields, and this is the sort of correction we want to be considering to describe the complex structure of the moduli space. So let me make a couple of remarks about it. First of all, this sort of F term isn't manifestly supersymmetric. It's supersymmetric because by virtue of the fact that this tensor omega, or rather, this tensor omega is annihilated by D bar. And furthermore, there's something a little bit funny about these F terms because, of course, the deformation of complex structure is a global thing. It's a thing which is non-trivial globally over the moduli space, but locally, it's certainly locally trivial. And what that... Yes? D is just the four-dimensional spinner. Oh, these are just the lowest bosons that live in these superfields. So this is just a two derivative. This is just a correction to the kinetic terms for these. Contracted with this, well, with this tensor omega I bar J bar, which is the new 0-2 component. The space-time derivatives, the kinetic term. That's right, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. Right, so the condition, the supersymmetry condition, I'm just considering for simplicity an infinitesimal deformation of the complex structure. So that means I'm working really in the on-shell, in the on-shell supersymmetry algebra of this sigma model. And in that case, the supersymmetry condition is just the condition that this tensor omega I sub J bar is annihilated by the Dolbo D bar operator. I mean, if I make this deformation of complex structure so that the quantum moduli space is still complex and Kähler, then that's another way of saying, you know, globally what the supersymmetry condition has to be. So I wanted to make a remark now. So about the fact that there's something funny about these F terms is the fact that since they are coming from higher cohomology classes, they're in some sense locally trivial. And what that means in terms of this is that I can always locally. So I've written these things as F terms, but locally, if I just looked at a little patch on my moduli space, I could effectively integrate up a D2 theta bar and write them as D terms. So I could locally interpret them as corrections to the Kähler potential, so of this form. So if I just do the integral D2 theta bar, they'll look as follows. So these nablas are just covariant derivatives in this nonlinear supermodel with respect to the Kähler metric that lives on it. So locally on the moduli space, I can always integrate these F terms up to D terms. And the reason, though, that I can talk about them, though, as being non-trivial F terms is that globally, I can't do this. So globally, because this deformation came from a non-trivial cohomology class. I can't do this. All right. Now I want to, although I won't really be discussing this aspect of the story today, I want to discuss for you a generalization. So this is the sort of F term that I would write down to describe a complex structure of the moduli space. But there are clearly generalizations of these sort of multi-Fermian F terms that I could consider. To describe these generalizations, so I'll parameterize these things by this integer p, which in fact is going, to, which in fact would be the same p that I used to parameterize the various versions of SQCD. So I'm just going to introduce for you a tensor, omega I bar 1 through I bar p, j bar 1 through j bar p, which is going to be symmetric under the exchange of I p with j p section of the bundle of anti-holomorphic p-forms on the moduli space tensored up with itself. And the sort of f-terms I can consider now, completely analogous to that f-term right there, would be just to take this tensor and then just contract all these indices up with these fermionic superfields. So here, this little dot that I've drawn here just indicates the contraction of the spinner, the spinner indices here. And I've just contracted all these anti-holomorphic indices on my tensor with these anti-holomorphic fermionic superfields. And so now, let me just introduce some notation. So this sort of operator is determined by this tensor omega, so I'll just in general denote it by curly O sub omega. So now you can ask the same question: what is the condition that this O be a chiral operator, at least to first order? And you can probably guess the answer. So the chirality condition is expressed most easily, since there's a Kähler metric on our moduli space floating around in all of this. We can just raise half of the indices. I'll raise the J's. This thing is now a section. It's an anti-holomorphic p-form, taking values into p-th anti-symmetric tensor product of the holomorphic tangent bundle. And then the chirality condition is simply that the anti-holomorphic, so the chirality condition on this operator O of omega, it just translates into the geometric condition that the Dilbo D-bar operator, which acts naturally on sections of this bundle, kills omega. So of course, there are two superspace derivatives to consider, but I've assumed that omega is symmetric but there are also two ways that I could raise either the I indices or the J indices here. And that would give us two conditions that the D-bar operator should annihilate omega, either version of omega. So now, there's also a reduction to cohomology that we have to consider. The point being that we only want to consider these F terms up to the addition of D terms. And so this reduction to cohomology amounts to considering our operators curly L of omega are defined up to the addition of q bar trivial things. So now I hope these conditions sound a little bit familiar to you, because although these sort of operators in the context of n equals 1 four-dimensional sigma models haven't really been considered so much, they have very natural analogs in the context of two-dimensional n equals 2 comma 2 nonlinear sigma models. So of course, if we start with our four-dimensional n equals 1 sigma model, just by reduction, we get a two-dimensional n equals 2 comma 2 sigma model. And we can ask the general question, so if I want to write down lots of chiral operators in this four-dimensional sigma model, I could consider the chiral operators that live in my two-dimensional sigma model and just consider lifting those up to four dimensions. So of course, a lot is known about chiral operators in two-dimensional n equals 2 comma 2 sigma models. And they correspond to the local observables of the topological A and B models. And so now, for these operators, come from, that I've written down here, come from Dobo cohomology classes on the target space in our sigma model, just the moduli space. So these things are coming, these things are precisely analogous to the local observables of the B, of the B topological sigma model. So I should say that I just introduced this generalization. Maybe may seem just a little bit ad hoc to you, and I'm not going to discuss it in the heterotic context, but it arises very naturally if we consider this example of instantonic corrections to the SQCD effective action for theories with more and more flavors. All right, so this finishes the first part of my talk about sort of generalities about n equals 1 effective actions. I'm now going to discuss sort of applying these ideas to the case of heterotic world sheet instantons. All right. So the basic result I want to describe for you today is the fact that if we want to consider instantons which don't, world sheet instantons which don't generate corrections to the space-time superpotential, but which do generate complex structure deformations in the moduli space of this compactification. What we want to do is we will consider, we just want to consider, rather than having smooth, isolated curves, we want to consider holomorphic families of holomorphic curves in our Calabi-Yau threefold. And so, to explain this point, we should just consider, let's just consider the, again, this sort of general form of the correction to the effective action. So here O of omega is one of these multi-fermion operators, and the P just indicates that it has P of these, it could have P of these fermionic superfields. And now you see the, in any instant-time computation, the structure of the instant-time correction to the low energy effective action is really determined just by the fermionic zero modes in the instant-time background. So for instance, if we wanted to look for instanton corrections to the superpotential, then we want our instanton to have precisely two fermionic zero modes to represent this d2 theta that appears in the F term, and which is fundamentally arises from the two broken supersymmetries in the instanton background. Conversely, if we consider an instanton that has more than two fermion zero modes, then it can't make any contribution to the superpotential because those extra fermion zero modes, well, would kill contributions to the superpotential. But precisely, those extra fermion zero modes mean that this instanton could make contributions to these multi-fermionic F terms, just because the extra fermion zero modes in the instanton background can be absorbed by the fermions that appear in this fermionic operator. So now, so if we want to think about instantons which generate corrections, which generate complex structure deformations of the moduli space, we want to think about world sheet instantons which have additional fermionic zero modes beyond the two that would produce this superspace measure. So a natural way to get extra fermionic zero modes is to consider instantons that have extra bosonic zero modes, because the world sheet supersymmetries will relate those bosonic zero modes to fermionic zero modes. And of course, a natural way to think about instantons that have extra bosonic zero modes is, as I've said, to consider in this case, rational curves which move in a holomorphic family. The bosonic zero mode is just coming from the motion in the family. So I just want to make this idea, a little bit more precise, I just want to sketch for you, indeed, a world sheet instanton computation for the case that we have a rational curve moving in a smooth holomorphic family in our threefold. So the first thing we're going to do is we're just going to count fermion zero modes around in our instanton background. So for this purpose, it's most useful, I think, to sort of use a physical gauge description of the world sheet instanton. What this really means is that, so, well, let's think for a second that we're talking about the SO32 heterotic string. This theory is related by S-duality to the type 1 string theory. And under this S-duality, fundamental string world sheets map to type 1 D1 brains. And so we could phrase our world sheet instanton computation either as the fundamental string world sheet instanton computation in the heterotic theory, or as a D1 brain instanton computation in type 1. And it's rather useful to use this D1 brain language because in that case, the theory is naturally topologically twisted because the D1 brain wraps a holomorphic curve, and that simplifies things a little bit. So the basic philosophy of doing these D-brain instanton type computation goes back to the work of Becker, Becker, and Sarmenger, and I'm just going to present sort of a schematic sketch of this sort of analysis here. So the first thing to do is just to describe what this topologically twisted theory looks like a little bit. So of course, not so important for the structure of this F term, but I'll just mention, of course, are the bosons in the theory. So on the world sheet, we have a set of bosons which all split into two pairs, x and y. And these bosons, which just represent normal fluctuations to the curve, take values in the rank 2 trivial bundle over the curve, which just comes from the R4 factor in our compactification. And then, so the x's take values in this C2, and then the y's here take values in the normal bundle of the curve in the Calabi L3 fold. And now, much more important to consider are the fermions on this instanton. So the fermions split up into two sets, the left movers and the right movers. So the left movers, by convention, I mean, by left mover, I mean a fermion that has a D-bar. Its kinetic operator is a D-bar operator. So the left-moving fermions are the gauge bundle fermions, which I'll call lambda. And these things take values in the left-moving spin bundle of the tangent bundle of C. So I remind you that C is just CP1. Tensored up with the restriction of our holomorphic bundle V to C. For shorthand, just know by V of minus 1. Now, very important to consider are the right-moving fermions. So the right-moving fermions, their kinetic operator is the D operator. And the important thing about these right-moving fermions is that they're the ones which are naturally twisted. So, of course, this twisting arises a priori. These right-moving fermions just take values in the right-moving spin bundle of C and the right-moving spin bundle associated to this normal bundle of the curve. But then, using the adjunction formula and the Calabi-Yau condition, we can write these bundles in a little bit nicer way. So the right-moving fermions come in three sets. There are two which I'll suggestively call theta alpha, which take values their left moving chiral spinners in C2, tensored up with just the trivial bundle over C. And I'm going to use this notation because these right moving fermions have this is their kinetic operator, just the D operator. I'm going to always consider them as transforming in anti holomorphic bundles over the curve, so that when we count zero modes, we can just immediately count anti-holomorphic sections of anti-holomorphic bundles. There's also another set, which I'll call theta alpha sub z bar. So z and z bar are just going to be local coordinates, holomorphic and anti-holomorphic on this C. Alpha here is just one of the spinner indices on C2 here. So we also have these guys. They transform in the same way, left-moving spinners on C2. And as anti-holomorphic one-forms, this index here on the curve. And then finally, we have a set of fermions which transform as right-moving anti-chiral spinners on C2 and tensor up with the anti-holomorphic normal bundle to the curve. So this index M indicates this anti-holomorphic normal bundle. So N has holomorphic indices M, and so on here. All right. So now this is the basic structure of our instanton world volume theory. I haven't made any assumptions about the local geometry of the curve here. Let's just count some zero modes and a couple of simple examples. So the first case I want to consider is just this case I started out with, for which C is isolated, smooth. This means that the normal bundle to C and X is just O of minus 1. Plus O of minus 1. All right, so now, of course, the left-moving fermions could have some zero modes, and these would be important in discussing whether or not some of these fermion determinants vanish. But for our observations here, this won't be so important. So let me just focus on the zero modes of the right-moving fermions. So you see in this example, for which the normal bundle is O of minus 1 plus O of minus 1, there are precisely two right-moving fermion zero modes, which just come from this trivial bundle, anti-holomorphic sections of this trivial bundle here. So these are what I call theta alpha. And so the zero modes of theta alpha here are precisely the zero modes that give us this chiral measure and the contributions to the superpotential. So now the case that we really want to be considering for this deformation of complex structure, the case that C moves in a holomorphic family, Actually, we're going to consider, for a deformation of complex structure, we'll see we need C to move in a one parameter holomorphic family. This means that the normal bundle to C and X is the direct sum of a trivial bundle plus O of minus 2. So you can see in this case, there are four fermion zero modes, four right-moving fermion zero modes. We have the same theta alphas. Then we also see, so these fermions here that take values in the anti-holomorphic normal bundle, there's a trivial factor here. And so these fermions here, they're two zero modes. So this psi bar. So I don't know, if I call this one factor one and this, I label this non-trivial bundle with two here. So the fermions which take values in the trivial bit have two zero modes labeled by alpha dot equals one or two. So you can see the way this computation is going to work. We want to produce, to describe a complex structure deformation, we want an operator that includes, we want one of these multi-fermion operators that includes two of these fermionic superfields, and we have precisely two extra anti-chiral world sheet zero modes that we're going to absorb to produce this sort of operator. Yeah, no, the curve is still holomorphic. Well, it's just required by, so we want to have, I mean, fundamentally this chiral measure comes from well, it comes, if the curve weren't holomorphic, then all the supersymmetries in the instanton. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going, that's one of the reasons this work is in progress. I'm not going to consider. Things are complicated. So I just wanted to say a little bit more. Okay, so we've done a rough count. We've done a counting of fermion zero modes, and there's a potential for these sorts of holomorphic families to contribute to these sorts of deformations. But to just schematically sort of, let's think about what, I mean, there's something we can, without doing any real work, we can observe something interesting, I think, about the form of these sort of deformations. So for that, we need to think in a little bit more detail about this computation. So for this, we need to think about, okay, actually, we're going to actually, schematically anyway, think about doing the computation. So we need to think about, of course, the world line action on our instanton. So I'll split this action up. So the action I, there's going to be I naught, which is going to be the free kinetic terms in the action. And there's going to be an interacting piece. All right. So now, if we have this case of an isolated holomorphic curve, we only need to know about these free kinetic terms because the world sheet instanton contribution, just by reasons of holomorphy, comes from a one-loop computation. So let's actually do this. So in the case of the isolated curve, the superpotential contribution just comes from evaluating the one-loop partition function in this world volume theory, which I'll denote as the knot in the case that we're just doing this to one loop. So this thing, I said there's a classical bit, which we've already mentioned. And now I want to write for you explicitly what these fermion determinants look like for a reason that will be clear in a second. Because this theory is twisted, the right-moving modes of the bosons are related by the world volume supersymmetries to the right-moving fermions, and there's a cancellation in this one-loop computation between the contributions of the right-moving modes of the bosons and the right-moving fermions. So all these one-loop fermions involve the left-moving sector of the theory. So anyway, so there's a one-loop fermion that comes from the left-moving gauge fermions, which is just going to be the fermion of their kinetic operator, the D-bar operator, coupled to this bundle that they live in. And then from the left-moving modes of the bosons, there are also some determinants which are associated to the normal bundle. So we have four complex bosons. Two of them take values in the trivial bundle in C2. So there's this determinant squared. And then two of them take values in this bundle O of minus 1 plus O of minus 1. So they give us this determinant. And this little prime just indicates that we're omitting the trivial zero modes that come from translations in R4 and that just go towards producing this measure. All right. So now, the case we want to consider is the case that C moves in a family. So we need to think, because there are these fermion zero modes, we need to think about the interaction terms. We're going to need to use some interaction terms in world volume action to soak up the zero modes of these guys here. So I'm just going to, in fact, write down for you. So let me just write down for you what these interaction terms are. So I've written down three terms explicitly, and then there are lots of other terms which aren't going to be relevant. So let me explain what I've written here. All right, so first of all, this thing J of Z is just one of the left-moving gauge currents. Now, this is a holomorphic three-form on the Calabi-Yau threefold, and on this curve, there's, of course, I'm using the decomposition between the tangent bundle of the curve, which is labeled by Z here, and the normal bundles, which I've given indices M and N. This is one of these world volume fermions of the two of the set that have zero modes. This is one of these background fermionic superfields that live in the bulk here. And so, of course, it's important that we have this coupling between these background superfields because we ultimately want to produce a fermion. I mean, an F term that involves two of these guys. And now these things here, these delta A's and delta G's. These are just harmonic representatives of the moduli. So these are harmonic representatives of the cohomology classes. Which represent respectively the bundle, the complex structure, and the complexified Cantor moduli of, So I guess the important thing to observe is that the moduli which appear here are actually on the moduli space, these are all local. These are all local sections of the anti-holomorphic cotangent bundle. So we wanted to produce this tensor omega I bar of J bar that was a section of this thing tensored up with itself twice, and these moduli that appear here are indeed these anti-holomorphic guys. All right, so there are a couple of ways to see why these are to know why these are the interactions to consider. Well, first of all, these are sort of the natural things that you would write down anyway if I asked you to guess some interactions. Second of all, you can just check from the supersymmetric DBI actions that these sort of couplings to the background fields appear. Fundamentally, these superfields, these D bar, phi bar, I bar, come from reducing the 10-dimensional Gaugino and Gravettino in the bulk. All right. So anyway, so these are the interactions in the world volume that we need to soak up the two zero modes of this guy here. We're going to pull down two. So our computation, just schematically, it's not worthwhile to say anything in detail. So schematically, we would just pull down a pair of these interactions from the world volume theory to soak up the zero modes, and then we just compute their correlator. So these interactions, I call this I sub interaction. So we just compute the correlator of a pair of these interactions in this free world volume theory. All right. So now in this example, we saw that the non-trivial bit came from the partition function of the left moving sector. when we do this sort of computation, the non-trivial bit is going to come from a current bilinears involving the gauge current here, and then these left-moving bosonic currents. So just schematically, what this sort of thing is going to look like, there'll be some sort of term that comes from the gauge current bilinear, and there'll be some sort of term. All right. So now there are, of course, other Kroll's terms involving these current bilinears that I could have written down right here. But I didn't write, so I could have written down terms that would involve a gauge current and then one of these left-moving bosonic modes. Or I could have written down a term that involves two of these left-moving bosonic zero modes with a p-index, or two with an anti-homomorphic p-index. But I didn't, because I know that in the tree-level action, those current bilinears vanish. So this, you see, has an implication for the structure of our deformation of the this has implications for the structure, what sort of deformations we can get from this one-parameter holomorphic family of instantons. These current bilinears, you see, will pull down two of these anti-holomorphic one-forms with legs along the bundle moduli. So these things can give us deformations of the bundle moduli itself. And really, I guess the interesting thing point to observe, though, is that, so now, of course, for the left-moving bosonic currents, we need one current with a holomorphic and one current with an anti-holomorphic index to get something non-zero. But you see the holomorphic and the anti-holomorphic indices couple separately to the complex structure and the complexified Kähler moduli of the Kolbe-L3 fold. So these sort of complex structure deformations, what they do is, they could have acted separately within the complex structure moduli of the threefold and the complexified Kähler. But what they actually do is they mix up. So this is a complex structure deformation, which mixes up the complexified Kähler and the complex structure moduli of the threefold. Now this sort of result actually isn't so surprising. There's actually, in fact, the fact that the quantum mechanically the complexified Kähler and the complex structure moduli space isn't a simple product. We didn't actually have to do an instanton computation to see this. There's actually an effect which occurs at one loop in alpha prime, which already destroys this product structure, which I just want to mention to you. So this effect has very much to do with the sort of exotic properties of the hadronic B field. So let's go back to this expression for the superpotential. The important point about this expression for the superpotential is that in the hadronic theory, so we have these, we basically have a bunch of determinants that come from the determinants of the Dirac operator coupled to the world by fermions. And the important observation about these determinants is that if we consider them over the complex structure moduli space of the Kolbe-L or its bundle, they don't actually transform in a trivial line bundle over these moduli spaces. They transform in some topologically non-trivial determinant bundle. This would be really bad by itself, but luckily we have this B field here to save the day. So although these determinants transform in some non-trivial line bundle over these moduli spaces, this factor e to the ib also transforms in the inverse line bundle over these moduli spaces. So this, you see, has implications, though, for this structure of the moduli space, because B appears in this complexified combination with the Kähler class. So the fact that E to the IB transforms in a non-trivial line bundle over the complex structure moduli space of the Kolbe-L means that this whole complexified Kähler parameter transforms in a non-trivial C star bundle over the complex structure moduli space. And so already, because of this one-loop effect, the complexified Kähler moduli space of the Kolbe-L is actually fibered as a C star bundle over the complex structure moduli space. So in that sense, I mean, we didn't have to turn on instanton effects to destroy a simple product structure of the supergravity moduli space. That's certainly true. No, in fact, I was working today entirely in this global, in this context of global super. There are many. Yeah, so yeah, that's another in-progress sort of thing. All right, so let's see. So now this is, okay, I just have maybe 5 minutes, just a few minutes left. So I just want to, I'll just mention, so this is just some sort of very general sort of schematic computation. I just wanted to mention to you an essentially trivial example that shows that these sort of multi-fermion, that shows that these sort of families of holomorphic instantons can have these effects. So this example, like I said, is completely, in some sense, completely trivial. And that's just to consider the case that our Calabi-Yau threefold is actually just a T2 times S, where S is going to be, well, I'm assuming S is going to be a non-compact K3. So in these models, so of course this is an n equals 2, so of course I'm discussing an n equals 2 case here. I'm also discussing a non-compact case. But the important observation is just that world-sheen instantons which wrap supersymmetric cycles in this K3 can make non-zero corrections to the metric on the hypermultiple moduli space of this compactification. But you see, if we have an if we have a supersymmetric cycle in this K3, that's simply a cycle which is holomorphic in one of the compatible complex structures on K3. And so that means from our n equals 1 perspective of this trivial sort of Calabi-Yau threefold, we have a T2 family of these holomorphic curves. And we could go through a little exercise, and of course, from the n equals 2 perspective, we have a correction to the hyperKähler metric. But from an n equals 1 perspective, that looks precisely like one of these multi-fermion F terms that I've been writing down to describe the deformation of the complex structure. So this is sort of a trivial example. So let me just say that. Alpha prime corrections to these F terms. I think they're protected by the same arguments of holomorphy that protect the superpotential from perturbative. Okay, maybe we should talk about that. I'm not quite sure. So I think rather than go on and view the time, I'm just going to end here.